G'day, I'm Lola Berry, nutritionist, author, actor, TV presenter, and professional oversharer. This podcast is all about celebrating failure because I believe it's a chance for us to learn, grow, and face our blind spots. Each week, I'll interview a different guest about their highs as well as their lows, all in a bid to inspire us to fearlessly fail. Righto, we have a ripper guest on the pod for you today. Think comedic royalty here. Ursula Carlson, stand-up comic, presenter, author, all over your telly on Have You Been Paying Attention, The Masked Singer, Netflix special, got an amazing Netflix special out, got a book out, Rolling with the Punchlines, in an animated movie next year as one of the voices. Brilliant TED Talk. We talk about not having regrets, coming into this career mid-30s, which I just find so inspiring. About to do an Aussie tour as well. I hope you love this chat. I could have talked all day long to this incredible human being. In fact, when we hit stop at the end of this interview, you'll hear we just kept chatting, and so we've kept it in the pod. I hope you are as inspired as I am by this incredible human being. I'm going to start this podcast by saying I am so friggin' nervous right now. Wow. Ursula Carlson, I effed up your second name straight out of the gate, so I've effed it straight up. Carlson, you are an epic stand-up comedian. You have a hilarious podcast. You're a presenter. You're an author. I've just found out you're the voice on a new animated movie. Holy mackerel. Do you stop? Like, do you ever stop?
I hope not. Honestly, retirement scares me more than death.
I've heard you say that before, yeah. And I would probably agree with you there. But can I just say, I was more nervous to interview you than any other guest I've had on this podcast. Do you know
why?
So I've had Nazim on, your mate,
yeah.
But I get so scared of comedians because your brain is so quick. And my brain like catches up, and radio hosts are the same. They talk so beautifully, but your brain feels like it's like 5 seconds faster than mine, and your wit is insanely amazing. And that's why I get so nervous.
Yeah, but just so you know, it's mainly noise. Nothing goes through the brain. It just pops out of the mouth, and then later we think about it. It's not a simultaneous process.
Well, take it as a gift, I reckon. My first memory of you is I was in Melbourne watching Have You Been Paying Attention? Feels like quite a few years ago now. I feel like you've been on it for a while.
Yeah, I have.
And
yeah.
I was like, hold on, who is this human being? You were so fast. You had me in hysterics every time you spoke. You and Sam Pang were always like, if either of you were on the panel, I was like, I'm in. I'm in for the entire show. And so thank you. I know I'm just pretty much blabbering out compliments right now, but I think you're
amazing. I'll take it. Look, okay. Honestly, with that show, like I always think, you know, when you watch a show and you go, sometimes you watch something, you go, I don't know why, the concept's great, I should like it, but I don't. And then other things you go, like that show is basically just, you know, it's a quiz show about the week and we're not paying attention. So that's kind of the, and you go, oh, in principle, it shouldn't work, but because everyone gets on so well, and I think people at home can feel the chemistry. Sometimes you watch a show and you go, it shouldn't make sense, but it does. I love it.
Yeah.
And if you just had to read the concept for that show, you go, no one's going to buy this shit. No one's going to buy this shit. But then they have a knack of putting people together that just work. Sometimes you go, why is this person on the panel? And you go, well, if they weren't there, it wouldn't work. The chemistry just wouldn't work, you know.
And you do the New Zealand one as well, right? You're on both. Oh, look at you.
I sit in Ed Cavalier's seat.
You do?
On our one, yeah. I love it. Same thing. The chemistry is just great. It's because our host is Hayley Sproul.
Yeah.
We've got a young lady. And then Vaughn Smith is in Sam's seat. But it's it's just so much fun to do, really.
I really want to ask you about South Africa because I heard you tell the story of like this kind of like penny drop moment of what made you go, fuck this, I'm getting out. I want to be safe. I want to go somewhere. So you were at work. Mm. There was an armed robbery with like AK-47s. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you share a bit about that story?
Oh, there was just, I mean, I worked for the newspaper. So the whole, you know, like if you go to South Africa and you see the businesses, they have appropriate security. It's not like in Australia or New Zealand where you can just walk into a business. A lot of you have to sort of buzz, or and then they will let you in. There's enough security everywhere at businesses. So because the newspaper, our whole thing is it has to be open, you know. For you know, our business is people. So people would come in all the time. And one morning, I was a production manager, so I was there at 7 o'clock in the morning. There weren't a lot of us in, thankfully, that early. And then, yeah, these guys just came in with AK-47s and held us up and took our car keys and our wallets and some phones and, you know, jewelry. And then they stripped us and locked us in the bathroom in our underwear, which is quite common. When you live there, that happens. It happened at the liquor store where I worked too, but I wasn't there. So, but it's quite common, you know, to sort of lock you in your underpants because then nobody goes after you. No one runs after you, which why would you? but then, yeah, I just knew, you know, there were a few things. I just thought, I can't live in this country. I don't want to raise my kids in this country. And then I saw an ad in the paper that said, do you want to immigrate? And I thought, yeah, I do. And it said, why not New Zealand? And I literally, 3 months after I saw that ad, I had sold my car, I sold my house, I sold everything, and I just got on a plane and I moved to New Zealand. I didn't have a job offer. I came in sneaky on a visitor's permit, got a job offer and stayed.
I love it.
That was in 2006.
And then, so you're in New Zealand, you're working, I want to say, at an advertising agency.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And yeah, you're working, I work for Ogilvy.
Yeah, that's right. And you're working next to your mate Leon and he's like, yo, you're really funny. I think you should do stand-up. And you're like, huh?
Yeah, I mean, because if you are familiar with advertising hours, it is insane. Like we used to work between 10 and 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, heaps of deadline. There's a lot of pressure and advertising and, you know, a lot of sort of, you know, corporates and bullshit. And so, you know, when you work in a high pressure environment, it creates diamonds, number one, but number two, it makes sure that your staff becomes really tight. Like you basically form a gang.
Yeah.
Like if shit goes down and you're in management, you're fucked because we will take over that company at the drop of a hat, like, because you sort of, it's almost like you're pushing people in a corner and they're ready to fight. Like, they are arming themselves. Like, so we were real tight, all of us. And then we still, because I sat right at the window that looked out at the car park as people would walk in across the road.
Yeah.
And I would choose, like, walk-in music for them. And when by the time they got in, I had a gag for them, like nice leather pants, Roy. Like there was this one guy, Roy, who always wore leather pants and he's like 50, you know, like, and all this stuff. So we just used to riff people and just had the greatest time in between working, of course.
Yeah.
And Leon was like, shit, you're so funny. You have to go do stand-up. And I'd never even been to a stand-up show. I didn't know what it was. I'd never, you know, I mean, obviously it's kind of self-explanatory. I understood the concept of, but I'd never been to a live show. Like the first live show I ever attended was the one that I was doing.
Wow. And so can you talk to me about this contract Leon made for you with the coffee
machine?
I should
actually dig it out. I've got it somewhere.
Do you really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, because he did like a proper mock-up on cardboard and everything using all the agency's stationery. He made a, so I got headhunted to go over to Y&R, which is a different ad agency, and Leon made this fake contract to go do an open mic night. And I mean, I got a little coffee maker too, but he made this big card that everyone had signed, and on the inside it had this contract to say that I would go and do this open mic night, and I had to sign it in front of everyone. And I'd already had a few drinks in, and he had booked it in. for that Monday. This is the Friday. He had booked it in for that Monday. So there was no time to panic or anything. And he had booked seats for 70 people in the, like, he just sent out a group email saying, Ish is going to do stand-up. Who's coming? And 70 people signed up for it. And he booked tables for 70 of them. And then come that Monday, I went and I did it. Like, I was on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
So I wrote a little four-minute spiel of what I thought was funny.
Yeah.
And I just sat in my car after work till like 8 o'clock that night, just memorizing what I was going to say. Then I went in. They were all sitting there in this long room with other people, of course, that I don't know. Like, I think there was... It was a sellout, so it would have been like 180 people in the room.
That's pretty huge if you've never done stand-up before.
Yeah.
Were you scared?
So, I was petrified. I can still, to this day, remember every second of that night. You know, when something big, I guess, like, to me, that would be the same like as like jumping out of a plane or, you know, just something massive that happens and you go, I will remember this moment for forever.
Yeah.
I could hear the blood going through my brain. Like, that's how everything was just super heightened. I could hear my heart beating. I was walking from side of stage to the microphone, which to this day is still the longest walk on the planet for me. And as I walked out, I thought, they're going to hear my heart. Like, I could hear, yeah. I could feel my heart. I thought, they're going to hear it. And then when I got to the mic stand, I realized I've never taken a mic out of a mic stand. I don't know how it works. I have no, never held a microphone. Like, you know. So then in that little scuffle of me and the microphone, I forgot everything that I was going to say. And I panicked. And I looked at them and, you know, sort of in my scuffle, I was like, shit, that was hard. And then they started laughing. And then I looked at them and they were all in green because it was St. Patrick's Day and it was sort of the start of the evening for most of them. And I just started, I said, oh, you look great. Green's my favorite color, but I can't wear it because I look like Shrek. But I sincerely said that to someone as a conversation, but into the mic, but not, you know, like just trying to center myself. And then they were all laughing and then it sort of, it just kind of, because then someone went, oh, and I went, don't worry, you know. So then I sort of, by the time they stopped laughing for their first gag, then I kind of remembered what I was going to say. But my leg wouldn't stop shaking. It just had this involuntary, and I nearly bent that mic stand. It was nerve-wracking, man. I can still remember the smell of it.
So visceral. I don't know how you, I feel like it would be the most courageous and brave thing. Like, it would petrify, the thought of it would petrify me. So, is it true you just thought that was like a one and done? You were like, okay, done my stand-up, done that, then you got a call from like the guy running the night?
Yeah, yeah. So in my mind, this was skydiving, you know, if you always go, I really want to go skydiving, and then you go skydiving, and then you go, take that off the bucket list. I've been skydiving, you know, like it's done. You don't need to do, you don't skydive every fucking day. Yeah. You just want to do it once, right? So I was like, okay, I'm done. And I had a few drinks, and then the next day I get a call from the owner of the club saying I'm through to the next round. And I'm like, what? And he goes, it's like the start of the comedy festival. They've got this thing called Raw Quest.
Yeah.
And they look for new talent, and I'm through to the next round. And I go, oh, shit, no.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in comedy. I said I did it as a work thing. It was like a group thing for work. And I said, I'm not interested in comedy. I'm already nailing life. I said, you give that to someone who's interested in comedy. And he's like, you are so good. I said, mate, I knew 70 people in that audience. I said, they were all laughing because they all knew me. And he goes, I was in the room. I was laughing. I don't know you. He goes, you should come back. It's a great opportunity. And because I don't believe in missing opportunities. I was like, shit, I'm going to have to go back. So I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell Leon because I had started at the new agency at this point. So there was no one, you know, and I'd only been in the country relatively new, you know, it's a couple of years in. And I thought, yeah, no one knows me. It doesn't matter if I make a tit of myself. I'm going to go back and do it again. So I wrote a new 4 minutes because I thought that's how it worked. Every time you go, you have to write new material.
Yeah.
So I went back, did it again. They were still laughing. But even if they weren't laughing, I would have gone back, because then after that second time, I was just hooked. It was just,
yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that story, because I love the way you describe that. I feel like your style of stand-up is that storytelling kind of style. I've recently been in Los Angeles and I went to a few stand-up gigs and I was petrified for a lot of the performance that I get picked on. And because I'm the only Aussie in the audience, I'm like, oh, here we go, token Aussie. I'm about to get ripped to shreds. Yeah. And I spent like the better part of the evening just petrified, purely petrified. And I like that your whole ethos is not to pick on your audience. Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like it just from the get-go, also because I didn't know anything about stand-up. So I didn't know the rules. I didn't know what people did, or, you know, that was even a thing to destroy the, you know, the audience. I was like, why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah.
But what I do know, and I think because I hadn't been to a stand-up show, and the reason I hadn't, because, I mean, I was already in my mid-30s at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason I hadn't been is because when my mom was in her 20s, she went to a comedy show and she sat in the front and the guy ripped her to shreds because she wore glasses. And she just like, she did, so she didn't get a taste for comedy at all.
Yeah.
So she used to talk about that all the time. So I just went, oh, I'm not going to pick on my audience. They come to see the show, not be the show.
Yeah.
Plus, you don't know what goes on in people's lives. You know, people go to a comedy show because they go, I've had the shittest week. I just need to go have a wine, relax, and not think about my shitty life for an hour. And now you go in there and someone you don't know humiliates you in front of a room full of people you also don't know. Like, why would you do that? Like, you don't know. Totally. You could be the thing that pushes someone over the edge. That's not my job. My job is to make sure you have a great night, that you leave feeling better than you did when you came in. Not
totally.
Question your own life going, what the fuck is, you know, like, and most of the things that I see people get ripped for, I'm like, it's literally stuff they can't help. Like, why the fuck are you so tall? It's like, this guy didn't make himself.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, totally.
Why are you climbing into this guy?
I think you've shared a story of like a guy came to one of your shows and you knew it was a sellout show, but the seat next to him was empty. Yeah. And you always mingle with your audience after, and he came up to you and shared that was his dad's ticket.
So, yeah. I was in Adelaide, and I think it was Adelaide, and I knew the show had sold out, you know, like, because you get the reports, so you know that there shouldn't be empty seats.
Yeah.
And there was a guy sitting right in front by himself and the seat just empty. So I was like, okay, not gonna dwell on that. Not gonna ask, where's your mate? Nigel, no mate.
Yeah.
Just moved on with it. Then after the show went out and he came up and he goes, I was sitting in the front. Oh, of course I recognized him. He was sitting front. I'm like, he goes, I bought tickets for my dad and I to come and see your show. He loved you. He goes, and then he died this morning.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and I didn't know if I should come, you know, he goes, I didn't know what to do. And then I thought, no, Dad would have wanted me to come. So I came to the show by myself. Yeah. I didn't want to give the ticket away. And I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, can you imagine if I climbed into him? What a day. What a day for him.
Yeah. I love that he came up. I love that he came to the show. I love that he was like, I'm doing this kind of because my dad would want me here, you know. I also love your TED Talk, my friend. That TED Talk thanks. Where you talk about no regrets.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, like you probably don't know this about me, but I'm a nutritionist by trade and I've just turned 36. I've spent the last 6 months in LA training as an actor and I've been training for the last year or so, but a lot of people are like, you're too old to change careers.
No.
It's the feedback I get all the time, but I don't want to have regrets.
Yeah.
So but your story is you – Was it 33 when you did that open mic night?
Yeah, 33.
And full circle here, but to go back to the TED Talk, was it a teacher that taught you about having no regrets?
Yeah, so I was a bit of a handful at school. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I was a bit out of control and I was a bit Because I've got a very strong will, and as a, you know, like my mom always goes, it's hard to raise a kid with a strong will, but it makes for a great adult. But you have to, you know, sort of plow through. But so as a, I think it was like 16, I'd just been expelled from boarding school. Then I went to this school, just a normal, you know, from home school. And within my first month, I had this homeroom teacher, and she held me back. She's like, you know, from class, it was quite a confronting, aggressive class. And you know, I was going her and I was going the class, and I just wasn't taking any shit. And she said to me, there's no greater waste of time than regret. Mm. That's it. Like, she didn't try to preach to me. She just said that. And in that minute, the second she said it, it's like I could hear a penny drop. And I was like, yeah, like that makes sense to me. And I you know, like different people have different things that make their penny drop. But to me, that was it. I was like, yeah, you're 100% right. And anyway, so that kind of changed the whole trajectory of my life. And from then on, I just went, yeah, I'm just going to embrace everything. I'm not going to regret stuff. I'm not going to do stuff that's going to make me want to regret stuff. I'm going to, you know, sort of try to, you know, I don't want to say like living my best life, but basically that, and just grabbing every opportunity that I can. And I think a lot of times, because my brother once said to me, he goes, you're lucky, you get all of the opportunities. And I'm like, no, I'm just ready.
Yeah.
I'm open to it. I hear when there's an offer, I hear when I get a challenge and I take it, you know, and that's the difference. On a side note, I quickly want to tell you, I found that teacher. So after the TED Talk, and the TED Talk is sort of one of those slow burn things that you don't know how it's going to impact other people's lives, but then sort of out of the woodworks every now and again, I just get this amazing story where people will send me a thing. Like there's this one kid who came out of juvie and he tattooed it all up his body, the side of his body. And he's like, I've been out of juvie for like 4 years and I saw your TED Talk. It's one of the things that they played for us at juvie. And he goes, that has completely changed my life. So he had that tattooed. There's no greater waste of time than regret. So anyway, but there's been a few stories like that, right? And then I thought, you know, I know this teacher's name and it's kind of a very common name in South Africa, but I'm going to look her up. I'm going to see if I can find her. I Googled her and the first person that came up was her. And she's a child or a youth psychologist in South Africa. She works with troubled teens now. And I thought, and she's really sort of hit her knack there.
Yeah.
So I emailed her and I said, look, you won't remember me. I said, I was in your homeroom and when I was 16 years old, you held me back one day. You told me this and this has changed the, you know, total trajectory of my life. This is the link to my TED Talk. This is all that. And then I sent her heaps of photos and screen grabs with the permission of the people that shared it with me. Of the lives that she has changed. I said, this is all the people that I could remember now, you know, because people, I get heaps of stuff in my inbox. I said, so this is just some of the stuff and I want you to know that you are making a difference because I think it's important to tell people.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, you don't need to reply. I just want you to know you are making a difference. So she sent me an email back and she said, I do remember you. She said, I know exactly where you're sitting in my class. She says, I will never forget you, she says, because I was never a teacher. She was only a homeroom teacher, and she was only ever a teacher for one term, which is 3 months.
Oh, wow.
While she was studying to become a psychologist, and then the teacher that was supposed to be the homeroom teacher, because I didn't know what went on there. I was just brand new in that school.
Yeah.
And apparently that teacher had to leave for some medical thing. So she just came in and filled in for one term. And then left, but she never taught a class or anything. She was just a homeroom teacher. She goes, so I was only ever a teacher for 3 months. So the chances of me crossing paths with you was so minute.
Wow.
She goes, but I do remember because you were the only problem. Yeah, so I've sort of stayed in touch with her, and it's really been amazing.
Oh, I love it. You also mentioned that TED Talk about spotting opportunity, and you've said in a few interviews, like, you're good at hustling, but you don't go out and chase. You're just open and, like you just said before, ready for the opportunity. And I like this concept of spotting the opportunity, because I think we can get in our own way every now and then, and like self-doubt and all of that kind of stuff can creep in. Can you share a little bit about like how spotting opportunity has worked for you? Because now you're a voice in an animated movie.
Well, that's actually a good – so, I mean, when I started doing stand-up, so I'm from – I worked as a typesetter initially and then as a graphic designer, as an artist, as a – you know, and then I became a photo retoucher, and it just kind of – so all design, creative, right? So then from there, getting into stand-up. So I thought, okay, I'm a stand-up comedian. That's what I do. And then someone said, oh, they want to send me a script for a movie, and one of the characters need to be funnier than she is, but she's not funny at the minute. Would I change some? And I was like, oh, I guess I'm a writer now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then so I did that, and then that led to more of that. And then, you know, so it's sort of just – and there's been other – there's been, like, radio stuff, and there's been – so then during the pandemic, I – because I hate going for auditions. I've only ever been for two auditions. Then I got the offer to go – to do the voiceover thing. And I was like – but they wanted me to audition for it. And I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate going for auditions. I'm like,
it's nerve-wracking.
You kind of know, you know, to me, it's like, because I'm not motivated by money at all, at all. Like, I know I could make more money if I do ads, but I don't want to.
Yeah, you don't advertise at all, do you?
No.
I love it.
No, and I, you know, because I'm not motivated by money. So it's a massive strength, you know, for me personally.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they go, we want you to audition. I went, no, I'm all right. You know, either you want me or you don't. You know my voice. You know my work. It's out there. If you want me for the role, have me. But if you don't, then, and they go, can you at least just read these lines? And I went, okay.
Yeah.
And then, but the day that I was supposed to do it, I was in an accident and I broke my collarbone and I had to go to hospital. So I missed it. And then I was like, oh, well. Sorry guys, I can't do it. I'm so high on these drugs that they gave me that I can't speak English anymore, because that's the thing. If English is your second language, the minute you're drugged up, drunk or tired, it goes.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm like, I can't do it, I'm afraid. Yeah. And then the next week they came back and they went, you know what? Just take the role. And then I thought, okay, I've never done an animated thing. I've never done a voiceover for anything. I'm in this little booth by myself. And now you have that thing. And like you say, you're getting your own way. And we're our own worst handbrakes. And I was like, okay, so you don't want to look like a dick, right? That's the number one thing. Like,
totally.
Most people go, I don't want to look like a dick.
Yeah.
I don't want to fail. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't want to look like a dick and we don't want to fail. Those two things cannot be in the same room. They just cannot. So anyway, so I'm like, you know what? I'm in this little booth. There's a Zoom screen in front of me. All of the people, the director, the writer, the producers, they all sitting at their Zoom screens like this looking at me. Oh. I'm like, you know what? Balls to the wall, mate.
Yeah.
And I did the voiceover for this thing, and it was the most fun I had. They were howling. It was sound, like the sound was off, obviously, but I could see them laughing. But I thought, it doesn't matter, because I'm having a great time with this character.
Yeah.
No one that's going to watch that movie is going to know what happened in that sound booth. They're just going to go, that was great. You know, like they're going to get full 100% effort for that. And when I watch it, then I'll know. I gave a full 100% effort. I threw myself around that sound booth. I, you know, if my little rhino fell down, I fell down in that booth. You know, like everything it did, I did.
Did you really? That's amazing.
If it ran into a tree, I ran into the circles, you know, to get it and all that stuff. I had such a great time. And then afterwards, they were like, that was 100% effort. Like, that was amazing. Just, you know, and I, yeah, I felt good about it. I will never regret doing it. But that was, you know.
And your kids are going to be able to soak that up. Your kids are going to love that movie, you know. And it isn't Donald Sutherland I saw in it as well? Like,
yes.
You're with the cream of the crop, my friend. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's one of my dreams. I think it would be so incredible. And, like, when I found this out about you, I was like, oh, my goodness, this just makes perfect sense. You've got such a wonderful voice. You've got this really cool accent too that is, like, iconically your own. It's such a hybrid. And so I think this is the beginning of many animated. I think you'd be amazing. I love watching the BTS of like Bradley Cooper in Guardians of the Galaxy because he plays this little, I think he's like a little, not a Weasley thing, but he's like a little foxy thing. And it's so much fun to see the actors just, like you said, like get hit or like get this. Yeah. They get so into it as these incredible. And so I can't wait. I am so pumped. I know that comes out next year and I cannot wait to see that.
Honestly, I felt like I was that little rhino. Like when I left, I was like, that's her. And even my management would refer to her.
I love it. I want to chat about therapy. I know you've done quite a few hotel quarantines and I heard this, I think you were talking to Will Anderson and you were like, they wouldn't give me a coffee mug. Like you had these. And I've done hotel quarantine as well. And I'd learn about the mug thing. So I had packed my own mug and like my own knives and wrapped it in my suitcase beforehand, bought salt, pepper, the works. But I heard you talk about like having a therapist as a check-in, yes, throughout like quarantine and the year, you know, the COVID times that we've had, but also just I've heard you say like as an adult, just having a therapist as an adult. Can you share a little bit about why you're pro-therapy?
I just think if you're a grown-ass adult, we all have stuff. It doesn't matter what your childhood was. Like if you were, you know, your parent, maybe, you know, your parents loved you so much that you sort of feel now that you're out in the wild world by yourself, there's not that kind of support. Then you need a therapist to sort of guide you through that. There's so much shit that happens every day that you have to process, and you're one human being processing everyone else's shit and your own shit. You need help. It's like you can't expect to buy a brand new car and drive that thing for 90 years and not once get a service, oil change or a nothing. You have to have help, you know. You've got to have, even if it's just a neutral sounding board when you say, because, you know, you could be the problem. You don't know. If you don't go for therapy or you don't check in with someone that's neutral, because if you have a problem, say, with your partner or whatever, you talk to your friends and they go, he is out of line.
You're only going to, you know, bias.
Yeah, you know, you're only going to hear what you need to hear in that minute. But sometimes you need a therapist to go, no, you're the problem. And sometimes you have to shop around to get an honest therapist, you know. Like, don't just go the first one and go, this is what I heard. And it's like with anything, it's you're like a favorite restaurant. I occasionally have to chop and change a bit to get to the, you know. But then once you get there, you need to have a therapist. It's healthy, you know.
It's so healthy.
And you've got to talk about stuff.
I think as well, like, and I mean this in the best way, you've got kind of a weird career, like highs, lows, busy times, quiet times.
Yeah.
And so I think especially if you've got a career that a lot of people can't relate to, they can admire, but they don't walk in your shoes every day. It's really helpful as an entertainer, and you've said you're a creative as well, just to have that outlet of like, hey, let's process. It's my non-negotiable therapy. I'm like, I think it's the key between like being a good human and being a not so great one, because you're able to process stuff. My question, and this is what I found so inspiring about you. I love that you're just like, this is me, no filter. Say it how it is. And I watched your Netflix special last night. Loved, loved, love, love. But having a career flip in your mid-30s, like it's really confronting for me in Australia. Like when I'm in America and training, everyone's like, oh, that's so exciting. I love that you're doing this. When I come back to Australia, the most common question I got DM'd on Instagram about was they're like, are you coming back to have a baby? Like, are you coming back to settle down? Are you coming back to like nest? And I was like, no, nah, I'm coming back for a book tour in Crimbo, mate. Yeah. Like, yeah. But it just, I just find it in Australia for me, I don't know if it's Tall Poppy, but it just feels confronting being in your mid-30s, changing careers. And you've done it brilliantly, and it inspires me so, so much. What advice would you have for someone that's like, I know I've got this dream, I want to get out of the safe lane and I want to chase this dream? What advice would you have for someone like me?
Do it. As long as you're breathing, you can do it. And when people go, I can't afford it, I go, yes, you can. It's amazing. Like, if you ever say, read articles or go read a story about people who have lost their homes in a fire or a tornado or whatever, and how they can come back from that. All you really need in life is your passport and a credit card.
Yeah.
And you can live in a studio apartment. You can scale down. You don't need a four-bedroom house in Bondi. You don't need what you think you need. If you're happy, like, and I think, like, when I used to work in advertising, and don't get me wrong, I loved it. I loved working in advertising, but occasionally I'd sit at my desk and I'd look out at the guy mowing the lawns and I'd go, I wish I was him, because at least he's outside smelling the fresh grass. But I'd also go, only 30 more years, then I can retire. Now, the sort of retiring scares the absolute shit out of me. I'm like, oh, I'm never doing that. That's not a thing. I'll play more golf, but I'm not retiring. That's not on the cards for me, you know. Like, I just knuckle down and do it, and don't listen to other people, especially people in the industry that they have been burned, or they, you know, have their own past, or they have their own story, or they have their, like, I will never forget, let's say, a senior comedian, right? So a pro comic in New Zealand said to me, when I just started going over to Australia, because I, from day one, I would go over to Australia and go do shows over there and go do festivals and whatever. And he said to me, because then I was already sort of at the earning point, you know, it takes a few years to get to the earning point, but I was at the good earning point in New Zealand and then going over to Australia, not making money for months at a time. And he goes, why do you keep going there? He says, you should stay here, do corporates. You can make like $10,000 a day almost if you just stay here. He says, you're wasting your time over there. And then I just went, all right, mate. And I fully did not give a shit about anything. As soon as he said that, I said, number one, he's motivated by money. I get it. Like, it's a strong motivator. Like, heaps of people are motivated by it.
Yeah.
Number two, he doesn't understand my vision. He doesn't understand. He cannot see my dream. It's not about making money. It's about growing the audience. And I'm really passionate about what I do. And I think there's nothing more powerful in the world than making people's weeks better, or their day better, or just even that 1 hour better, you know. If you can go and just make people laugh for an hour and not think about their shit, it's incredibly powerful, and it's a big responsibility. And I was like, I want to do that. That is my goal. It's not about – and then eventually, you know, after a few years, I built my base stronger. My base is now stronger in Australia than it is in New Zealand. That same guy hasn't come to me now and gone, hey, looks like I made a huge fucking mistake, mate. Yeah.
Do you know what, though? You have achieved what you set out to do, because I live in a little town called Bangalore, which is just in the hinterland of Byron Bay, and I went into a bookstore to buy your book, Rolling with the Punchlines, and I ended up in a 15-minute conversation with the lady at the checkout who is obsessed with you and your amazing lockdown diaries. You know how you do it?
Yeah, lockumentaries.
Lockumentaries. And I heard, and to the point that, like, she'd seen the exact last one you'd put up with that filter of the beard and moustache. Yeah. And she's like, how funny was that filter? And, like, we had a full conversation. Yeah. And I just think you are doing that. And so that's a huge testament to you. Now, exciting news for Aussies, you're coming back for a tour next year, right?
Yeah, hopefully. I start in March in Melbourne again, which is sort of almost like a home game for me. And then, as soon as Melbourne finishes, then I go on a tour.
You do Narre Warren too, mate.
I know. Because I had to skip it this year. I only had to cancel two venues. Narrowarren and Darwin because of COVID.
Yeah.
And people were not impressed. And I was like, I promise I will come back. So this is my comeback for them.
And it's called It's Personal. So it's a brand new, it's completely brand new, isn't it?
Yeah. 100% brand new. I write a new show every year because I'm still in that mindset from the first I saw every time you go on stage it has been new. So I just write new shows every time because I want people to come back and see me again.
Researching you, my boyfriend would come out and he's like, what are you laughing at? And it would just be anything that I've seen of you is just like I think one of my favorite things about you is like you've got such dry follow through. So you're able to like whereas if I got a laugh, I feel like I would just start laughing or like lose my banana. Like you see actors when they go on SNL, they just like break halfway through a skit. You've got this like wonderful, like dry, cheeky follow through. And it's just such a joy to watch. So thank you so much for sharing all that you have shared with your audience, but also with me today as well. I am, like I said, a fan and I was so nervous to have you on. So thank you so much. So next, so 2022, you're doing your Australian tour. The movie's going to come out. Is there anything else that is in the pipeline that you're allowed to talk about? I know you don't stop, so I know there would be.
I mean, I don't know. I just kind of, you know, go with whatever comes up, whatever opportunities presents itself, I'll go over there.
I love it. And to people listening, I'm going to put all the links to your shows in my show notes as well. It's been such an honor interviewing you today. I am a huge, huge fan. You'll always have a fan in me. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Hi, thanks for having me on your potty.
You nailed it.
And good luck with your book tour. Are you finished with it?
I go to Melbs next week. Go to Melbourne next week and then back in Byron for Crimbo and then back to LA.
Wow. Hey, good luck with that. My manager lives there in Bungalow.
Oh, really? Your manager's? P.S. I know it's still recording. It's just because I get afraid that I'll lose it. But the interview's ended. Your managers
she
have been incredible.
She just moved there like a week ago or 2 weeks ago in Bangalore.
Is that Ella or
no? That's Beck.
Yeah, Beck. They've been
Ella
amazing.
Is Beck's assistant. Yeah,
got it. They've been unreal. They've been like sending me your bio, checking in. So they're really onto it. So tell them they're awesome.
Yeah, they're amazing. No, I will see. But that's it. Like if you're in this industry or any industry, and you surround like in advertising, I was around Leon, and now it's like it takes a while to get those people around you. But everyone from my accountant, my lawyer, my manager, her sister, everyone. It's just these fucking amazing people. And weirdly, they're all women, but it wasn't a conscious decision that I go, I'm only going to have women around me. It just turned out that the best lawyer I could find for my needs was a woman. The best accountant was a woman. The best, you know. And it's
so
like,
good.
This is great.
You got to have your team. You got to have the people that are your cheerleaders, and you got to walk away from the dickheads that aren't. Like there's a lot of naysayers too. And I'm like,
fuck those people. Yeah. Honestly, I cannot tell you the amount of people who go, you're insane. Don't do it. Even my mum in the beginning was real scared, me leaving a good paying advertising job to go do gigs for free or $40 a pop. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Eventually, if this is meant to be, it'll pay. I said, but I just have a vibe about it. You know, when you just feel it.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that about, I love the way you talk about coming off stage and you could just, you'd had, it's like you'd had a taste of the like spirit magic waters or something and you're like, I'm there. This is it. I've got to chase this. So thank you, honestly. I was, so nervous. So I know you've got a big day and you don't stop. So thank you. And thanks for your pod. I'm obsessed. I love listening to it.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Hey, good luck. Stay safe.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah. That's a wrap on another episode of Fearlessly Failing. As always, thank you to our guests. And let's continue the conversation on Instagram. I'm at Yummo Lolaberry. This poddy, my word for podcast, is available on all streaming platforms. I'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and comment. And of course, spread the love.